Well, many of us were saddened to hear the news that white nose syndrome was recently discovered in northeast Iowa. That's only about 30 miles from our Wisconsin border, and it's certainly a cause for concern for our bat population. We're lucky to have some top-notch people, really, with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources working on this issue. One of them, Dave Riddell, is a bat ecologist with the Wisconsin DNR. He's been with us a number of times. Dave, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming by.
Well, thanks for having us. It's great to be here again, Larry.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have Jennifer Cher Riddell, your new spouse.
Yes.
Of 30 days or so.
Yeah, hi, Larry.
Hi, Jen. She's a conservation biologist. She's also a cave and mine specialist and works with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources as well. And welcome. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it very much. We have already callers online. You can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question there at the Larry Mueller Show. And you brought some bats, and we'll talk about those in a bit. But give us the status here. We've discovered white nose syndrome in Iowa.
Well, we didn't discover the disease yet. We found
genetic.
The fungus that causes the disease. So, which once the fungus is on the bats in prevalence, then the disease becomes very apparent with abnormal behavior and mortality at the cave entrance.
Okay, so there's a problem. Then maybe we should just do some basic background first for those who aren't familiar. Is how many types of bats do we have here in Wisconsin? Is it four?
Four cave bats that are susceptible to white nose syndrome. Then we've got three tree bat species that aren't hibernators in caves where the fungus is found, so they will probably be just fine from the disease.
Okay, so, and Jen, you're a cave and mine specialist, among others. So you wander around in the caves and mines looking for bats? Or?
Yeah, correct. We're putting together a cave and mine catalog of all of the various hibernation sites that bats use throughout the state, and that will aid in our white nose syndrome disease surveillance, and it's also aided in our prevention efforts.
Is there an estimate of the number of individual bats that we might have living here in Wisconsin?
Yes, I'd say we have at least 300,000 cave hibernating bats. Couldn't give you an estimate on the number of tree bats in the state, but that's a pretty good estimate.
300,000?
At least, yes.
Oh, man. That's a lot. And they're good mosquito eaters, aren't they?
They love all insects of that size. Mosquitoes included.
That's a really good positive thing that we can talk about with bats. Because I don't know why people get so upset about bats. So Judith Sears Poisson loves bats.
Oh, she's told us.
Yeah, she'd have her house full of bats, I think, we'd call her Batty around here sometimes. but a lot of people are just the opposite.
Yeah, well, I think it's the fear of the unknown. They're, you know, birds they see every day, they realize they're not going to get harmed by a bird. Bats are, if they see them, it's a flit through a dark sky, and it's sometimes scary to people if they don't know what it is or don't understand it. But bats are very, very beneficial to us ecologically as well as our economy. Agriculture relies and benefits on insect-eating services of bats.
Okay, so in other words, those insects that would attack the crops?
Correct. Found an economic study looked at just for Wisconsin, our bat species provide insect-eating services for agriculture to be between $658 million up to $1.5 billion per year.
Wow.
That's take away the bats from the landscape, and then you have to consider what does that mean for agriculture.
Wow, that's an unbelievable number. The white nose syndrome. There's some talk about what are the rules on caves and entering caves, and is there, you want to talk about that a little bit, Jen?
Well, sure. We know that white nose syndrome is caused by a fungus, and we know that the bats, of course, are spreading it. They're social animals, and as they go from cave to cave during their fall swarm mating period, searching for hibernation sites. They're clearly interacting with bats, other bats, and also during hibernation. But because we know that bats can pick up this fungus simply by being in a cave that's affected by the disease, we're also concerned that people could pick up this fungus from a cave environment if they get soil or mud on their shoes or clothing and potentially transport it to another cave or mine where it could then harm bats.
So we're trying to keep people out of those caves then?
Well, so the best thing to do if you're going underground, and a lot of folks are headed underground this summer. It's a nice place to cool off.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do is, if you've worn it underground once, just don't wear it underground again. Choose a different set of clothes, different set of shoes. Take a different flashlight if you're using one of those. We do have some decontamination rules set up for folks who are actively involved in recreational caving.
Yeah.
And those rules are available on the DNR website.
William had sent a Facebook note about wondering about if there was going to be anything affecting Crystal Cave in terms of being able to get in or out of it. He assumes every cave has bats, but that's not necessarily true, is it?
Yeah, not every cave or mine does have bats. The cave he references there, Crystal Cave, is a cave that does have a hibernating bat population, and it also happens to be a cave where folks go on tours. And
yeah,
we've been working with Crystal Cave and the various other caves and mines that offer tours in Wisconsin on white nose prevention. And so that cave, as well as others, are screening their visitors. When you visit the cave, you'll be asked not to wear things that you've worn in other caves before.
Oh, okay. Well, that's hardly...
Yeah, pretty easy, especially if you're wearing...
Yeah, not that big a deal, really, is it?
No. Right now, we're focusing on prevention. If the fungus arrives, then we have to go into a control mode, so to speak, and then that kind of change things a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ann in Duluth has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My lake place has a problem with bats in that they've nested right above the deck, and their droppings are creating a problem. They've been there several years, and I haven't done anything because I haven't been sure when during the day or night I should try to exclude them. And also, I don't want to compromise any babies by limiting the parents' access. So when should I be filling up that hole, and will the bats relocate somewhere else if I do that, or is that going to eliminate that particular population?
Well, thanks for your question, Ann. I think this is a popular question, or frequently asked question. So there's a few things I'd like you to know. So you're up by Lake Pepin, is it?
No, actually, I'm by Lake Mille Lacs in my lake place is by Lake Mille Lacs in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Okay. Well, I don't know about the rules in Minnesota, but in Wisconsin, there is a rule out that you cannot exclude bats between June 1st and August 15th. That's to protect the young that are born there.
Okay.
And so we don't allow any exclusions from now until August 15th. After August 15th, we can put up a one-way door, one-way exit over the hole that allows the bats out but not back in. And then you give it a week so you can be sure all the bats are out, and then you can take the one-way door off and seal it, or just leave the one-way door on, whatever you prefer. I thought there was another part of your question.
I think that was... Did you have another part to your question?
I was wondering, is it best to do... If I were installing the door, I guess it wouldn't matter whether I did it during the daytime or at night.
During the day is fine.
Okay. Okay. And where can one find information about one-way exit doors?
Our website has information on how to do it yourself, or if you don't want to climb up on a ladder, you can call a bat professional that deals exclusively with bat exclusions.
And you have some names there for people, of people?
Not yet, but we're working on that. But I would say find someone that deals exclusively with bats. They're the ones that know how to do it.
Okay.
And get a guarantee.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Glad to have somebody call and ask that question as opposed to just going ahead and...
Yes.
doing something that could create problems not only for the bats but for the homeowners.
Yes,
perfectly honest. Kevin in Cedarburg, it is your turn. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Well, we moved into Cedarburg in the outskirts like 2007, and we had tons of bats all over the place. I put up a bat house, had it the right height, facing the right directions, and no bats go in there, and now, 2012, we have no bats at all.
You're not seeing any bats in your area, you're saying?
Yeah, and we're out in the farmland where there's tons of mosquitoes and lots of bugs.
Yeah, do you have
And there's no bats at all.
Do you have any?
No, we sit outside, there's no bats.
Any nearby water?
No.
Okay.
Well, like when it rains, there's, you know, flooding in the backyard, but that's about it.
Okay. Well,
but there's still mosquitoes.
Yes. Well, that's good for the bats, not so good for you. I understand that. Here's a couple ideas. I hear this occasionally from people throughout the state. Oh, where did our bats go? We don't have them anymore. There's a couple of possibilities. Probably the most common is that if you had a lot of bats around there in the past, there was a maternity roost nearby, maybe in a barn or an attic or garage or shed or something,
sure.
And perhaps the landowners there didn't want them there anymore and excluded them, so those bats went elsewhere, and that's why you're not seeing them anymore.
Aren't they in trees?
What's that?
Aren't they tree bats?
There are tree bats, but I think more common in Cedarburg area would be actually the red bat and the big brown are most common out in Cedarburg area. But the tree bats do not roost in large numbers. They're usually single animals with their young or a small family group, unlike the cave bats, which will roost in large numbers in a attic, barn, even tree hollows. So I'm guessing that's probably what happened. As to why your bat house isn't being used, sounds like you know height, which direction to face it and such.
If it's no bats there.
Yeah, how long has it been? 3 years?
It's like 5 years, I guess. No.
Well, then it's unlikely you're going to get any resident bats in that bat house.
I know it took like a year or two before they first start going in there. But
yes, so I would say if they're not using it, it's not the right location. And not necessarily the location you put it in, but your actual property. Maybe it's not close enough to a lake or river.
They need that. Well, because there were tons of bats when we first moved here.
Well, I'm sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you.
Okay. thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dave Riddell and Jennifer Cher Riddell, our guests today. Dave's a bat ecologist, and Jennifer, a conservation biologist, both with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, talking with them about our bats and white nose syndrome. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What do you think about bats? Are you a bat fan? Would you prefer to never cross paths with them? Why or why not? You think you do anything to support or attract bats? Love to hear from you as we visit with Dave Riddell and Jennifer Cher Riddell of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources about bats. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Dave, you mentioned red bats earlier, and Jennifer, you were telling me before the show that the red bat has a cool sound.
Yeah, we actually have a monitoring program here in Wisconsin where citizens can become volunteers and record these bat echolocation calls throughout the state. And if you're trained to do that, you use a bat detector and walk for about an hour at night, or maybe go out on a boat ride an hour at night with a bat detector, record the acoustic calls, and that gives us an idea of what's flying. Each different species has a different call.
And we have some calls, and do we actually hear the calls, or are they too high-pitched for us to hear? We hear them?
They're we hear them with the unit we take out. The bat detector divides the frequency, so to speak, so that we can hear it. And that's how it's recorded. Basically, detects and lets us listen in on what bats are flying there. So, and it records a picture of their call.
Okay, and we've got a recording of four different bats. So, and so this is something we normally wouldn't hear. So it's pretty cool to be able to hear something that we.
Yes, it opens up a whole new world when you're out there at night listening to something you never hear.
Yeah. Well, here. Okay, let's go with the red bats. Feeding red bat.
That little buzz there you heard
is
when it captured the insect.
Ah! That is.
And notice right after it caught it, it's right back looking for the next one.
Oh, how many insects, how many do they really, you know, we hear all these stories about it'll battle eat its weight in mosquitoes in a day or something.
Yeah, well, it's not just one species of insect, it's multiples. And, you know, there's been studies that look at female bats when their highest energy demands are raising the young. They will eat their body weight per night in insects.
Why?
And the males who don't need such high energy to, you know, they're not feeding young, will eat half their body weight in insects per night.
That's still a heck of a lot of insects.
I weigh 200 pounds, which means I would have to eat 800 quarter-pound cheeseburgers per night. And do it tomorrow night, too.
Oh, my goodness.
My metabolism isn't that high.
Nor mine. Well, here's the hoary bat. Should we listen to the hoary bat?
Oh, one of our favorites.
All right.
It's got a cadence.
It's different kind of rhythm. It's kind of interesting. You could almost dance to that one.
I often do.
those are great. So they use those to detect the insects in flight. That's what they.
Yes. And to navigate, you know, it's dark out, so they don't want to hit tree branches. So all the echoes tell them what's in front of them.
And are they echoing pretty much constant then, or are they?
Yes.
I suppose they have to.
Yeah, and it's coupled with their wing beat, so there's not a lot of extra energy used. It's each wing beat is at the same time as a echolocation call.
Very cool. Marlin in Mineral Point. Turning to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thanks. Good morning. Shows on bats are terrific.
Thank you.
But I had a specific problem. I had one bat apparently fly into the house at a second floor deck with a screen on it, and it's susceptible to opening by itself when the wind blows hard. And apparently that's what happened. That's the only thing I can determine where a bat could possibly have gotten in. And it got in, and it was swooping around in one particular room. Well, actually in a couple of rooms, but I finally have been able to isolate it into one room simply by closing doors and so forth. I think I have gotten rid of the bat through a natural manner, but I still wonder what would be the best way to get a bat out of the house. Without harming the bat and making sure that it's gone.
Well, I think what you did was correct. You tried to isolate the bat and then opened doors and windows to allow the bat to leave on its own. That's obviously the first thing we'd like to see people do so that no one has to come in contact with the bat. But if that's not an option and you see the bat has landed on a wall or a piece of furniture, you can always use a shoebox or a Tupperware container and, of course, gently cover the bat.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he didn't nest. He landed on an area that's inaccessible. I have a high ceiling, and he absolutely went up to the peak when I turned the lights on. So I was unable to get him in any form. He did start swooping around in that particular room, and I guess what I did was I thought, well, I'll take a chance, and I'll open the screen when I go to bed, and hope that he finds the opening in the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really seen him since. I had to trade the bat for a bunch of bugs.
Well, bats are sensitive to temperature change and airflow and humidity. So even if you're not, you know, seeing the bat actually exit, chances are pretty good that they're going to find their own way out,
yeah,
given that,
yeah,
open window.
And you want to make sure one bat gets out and not 10 get back in.
Yeah.
No, what Jennifer said is absolutely right. You wait for them to land. If it's too high, wait for them to fly and then land at a lower spot, and cover them with a box. And I think, actually, if you check our website, there's a document on either building a bat house or excluding bats from your house, and there's a way that shows how to do it on one of those documents.
Hmm. Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Now, you brought some bats, or a bat at least.
Two bats, one from Wisconsin and one from Africa.
Yeah,
and tell us about those. Judith, did you get some pictures of those? We're going to put them up. Yeah, she's going to put them up on our Facebook page. I don't think we got them up yet,
yes,
but we soon will.
We have a couple ambassadors of the Wisconsin Bat Program that we use for educational purposes, and so we have a straw-colored flying fox, and that's a bat native to Africa. It's one of the mega bat or larger fruit
bats.
Yeah,
it's a good-sized bat.
Yeah, with about a 30-inch wingspan, and they weigh about as much as a can of soda. They've got nice big eyes and ears. They've got a fox-like or dog-like face. A lot of people find them very attractive,
mm-hmm,
and cute. And then, of course, we also brought a native Wisconsin bat, the big brown bat, and that's, of course, as Dave mentioned, a common species. It's often the one that people will notice flying around, especially urban areas, at dusk, and eats a lot of insects, of course, for us. And so people don't often get a chance to get up close to a bat, or at least not a bat that's holding still. And we like to give people the opportunity to see these guys up close when they're not flying fast, or when it's not dark out.
Yeah, and I think Judith's finally Judith's gotten those up, I believe. Oh, there's one. Oops. Oh, there you are, Jennifer. It's a little blurry. Mine's a little blurry. My picture's a little blurry.
Yeah, we can get you some good pictures, good close-ups.
Oh, there's a cutie. Look at him or her.
Her. Big brown bat.
Big brown bat. All right, well, tell you what, go online to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You'll get a couple of pictures of the bats that Jen and Dave brought along with them to the studio. Great to have you listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234. Connie in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I just was in Austin, Texas, without the slightest fragment of knowledge of what I was going to encounter there. After I finished my teaching gig, I discovered that there is quite a phenomenon there. There's a Congress Avenue Bridge, which is a four-lane traffic bridge with a pedestrian on the side. It jiggles and wiggles all day, and there are expansion joints in the deck of this bridge that are about an inch and a half wide and maybe 16 inches deep. And there are some species of Mexican bat that has chosen those crevices to use as a maternity colony. It's famous, but I didn't know anything about it. It was the most amazing sight. There's apparently 1.5 million bats that are living in these jiggling conditions, raising babies, and every night going out to feed. So terrified was Austin by this invasion of bats when this bridge was built, just because it happened to be a terrific location, that the city was very scared. A lot of newspaper articles. And Merlin Tuttle, who founded Bat Conservation International in Milwaukee, changed locations for the headquarters of the organization, and now Austin's population has redefined bats through his help and, of course, lots of consciousness raising to prize them beyond imagining, so that there are all kinds of people waiting down by the bridge at night to having great conversations about bats and waiting for the bats to emerge to feed the young. Can you tell me if there is white nose in that particular colony? Because I didn't hear anything about that during the time I was waiting to see this remarkable sight.
No, there's not white nose down there. You did a very good narrative about it's the Congress Avenue Bridge, and it is fantastic sight to see. Mexican free-tailed bats. Our farthest south white nose has been detected is, I believe, Arkansas, maybe Alabama. And I don't know if white nose will be going that far south because of the conditions. They're not hibernating in that bridge. That's their summer colony, and they will fly south to Mexico. So hopefully that species will be fine, although there are populations of that bat up in Oklahoma and Missouri. I think it's as far north as you might find one of those species. But, no, I think they're safe, and maybe Jennifer's got something to add about. She's been down there as well.
Jennifer?
Well, you're right, Connie. It's an amazing success story for bats, and I really recommend anybody who goes to Austin stop and make sure they see the bat flight in the evening. But Dave's right. The fungus that causes white nose syndrome is a cold-loving fungus, so it thrives in those cold, damp cave and mine conditions.
Not Texas.
Quick follow-up?
Yeah.
What I was also amazed at is with 1.5 million bats in this unexpected place, which was not built for them, they found it, and it just happened to be that the spaces were perfect. These mothers can leave, fly around all night, eat their weight, as you've already said, in varied insects, and then through sound and smell find their infant in these myriad cracks and crevices, crowded as they are. I think it's just, maybe it's not amazing to them, it's just amazing to me.
Well, to add to that, you think that's amazing it starts out at Congress as 750,000 females when they give birth to one young, then it turns to 1.5 million. Think about Bracken Cave, which is south of San Antonio, where you've got 10 to 20 million bats and in a cave, and those mothers, just like you said, will find their own individual young among that many bats.
That's amazing.
Very amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Connie, for calling. Appreciate it very much. And Jane in Darlington. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. My question is just about rabies. I had some bats in my house last year, and it seemed like everything online was kind of raising alarm bells about rabies, and I just hope that you guys could maybe dispel some of the myths and maybe tell folks what they should be concerned about, what kind of contact they should be concerned about, and I will take my response offline.
All right.
Okay, thanks for bringing this up, Jane. Another common question that I think the information needs to get out there so everyone can be aware of the risks as well as what to do if a certain action happens. First of all, bats, in general, have a very low incidence of rabies. It's been stated less than 0.5% ever get the disease. You can recognize it if there's some strange behavior, if the bat is on the ground flopping around or acting abnormal, flying around in the middle of the day and bumping into walls or whatnot. That's possibly a sick bat that needs to be handled carefully. You don't want to pick up any bat, whether it's appearing healthy or sick. So that's first rule of thumb. And if you have to pick the bat up, you would want very heavy leather gloves. Better yet is to get a bat outside using the shoebox method. If you happen to get in contact with the bat, say the bat, you wake up in bed and a bat was in there and bit you, or you can't be sure that it didn't bite you, try and capture the bat so that it can be taken in for testing through the state lab, and they can tell you within a very short amount of time whether the bat was rabid. If it was, then they can give you a series of post-exposure vaccination shots, and you'll be fine. The other thing is, if you've got an incapacitated person sleeping, say had a few too many drinks the night before, wouldn't know whether or not he was bit, but there's a bat in his bed or, you know, roosting right next to him, you may want to capture that bat as well. And be cautious if you've got small children. And CDC has a website that talks about bats and rabies, and you can get more information there.
Again, thanks for calling. An email from Joe in Portage County. What can you tell us about a bat locator identifier app for a smartphone? My understanding is that after plugging in a device, the phone identifies the bat species and sends the location to a research site. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I've heard of people working on this. I thought it was in California there was someone making an app to do such a thing. I would be surprised if it can automatically and quickly tell you what species it is, but I have heard some small talk, meaning I haven't read a paper about it or seen any such device, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's one already completed. And if you have one, send it my way. I'll give it a try.
Yeah, absolutely. Email from Sherry in Hayward. For those of us who put up bat houses, anything we should be doing to clean or disinfect the house after the bats have gone in the fall? Anything there?
Yes. Wait till the bats leave and get a tall stick or long stick, and there'll generally be some wasp nests in them, which don't hurt the bats. They live together without pestering each other. And take a tall stick. It's got to be small enough to fit in the space, 3/4 inch, and go in there and knock those wasp nests out and any cobwebs or anything. Generally, they're fine. More importantly, you want to go up, if you can get your ladder up there, and make sure all the joints where the wood meets the sides and such is well sealed and caulked. Generally, that's one of the main maintenance things you want to do, is make sure the boards haven't pulled apart and there's big air gaps in there, because we want to trap the heat. That's basically the maintenance you want.
All right. And here's Jeanette in La Crosse. Hi, Jeanette.
Oh, hi. A couple years ago, I was at work, and they have these little metal boxes, you know, that they put out to catch live traps for mice, you know? Well, you know, just because I'm curious, I guess I was walking by one and I opened it up. It was outside, you know, like on a loading dock area, and a whole ton of bats flew out of it. And I just wondered, was one of them attracted in there somehow, and then and that it called others in? But I felt so bad because they were all stuck in there. Thank God that I opened it, you know. What do you think happened there?
I think you got a very large mouse trap if you've got numerous bats in there. But if it's out on a loading dock, it doesn't surprise me, because if bats are coming in at night to day roost, they saw the hole, whatever size it was, and figured maybe I can climb in here and have a protected spot for tomorrow. And yes, bats will make noises to let others know there's a suitable spot. And probably went in there and the door closed and waited for you to save them.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And that's a great way to put it, Dave. Caitlin in Milwaukee. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a quick story. After I had gone to New York for a gala event, the next day my flight was really delayed and I didn't get home until that evening. And the first thing I wanted to do was hang up the black dress that I had taken, because it was an expensive dress. And I lived downtown in Milwaukee. And the next morning I woke up and there was a bat in my bathtub, because it had come in at night with the open window at the Gramercy Hotel, and it flew into the closet, I think, because I heard like what a baby was crying, but it was probably the bat making some kind of noise, right?
Oh, you think so?
Well, the dress was hanging over the bathtub where I had hung it before I went to bed, and in the morning the bat was trying to get out of the bathtub with no success.
Nah.
And I was worried because I had heard bats, I don't know anything about bats, living in the city, but I had heard that, you know, they mate for life or whatever. So I was really worried after I got the bat out of the window that it was in Milwaukee with all its friends in Manhattan, missing it.
It's mating for life is not what occurs in bats, at least not for Wisconsin.
What about Manhattan?
They've got the same species we've got here, so I'm sure your bat that you let go will find another mate. And I'm not sure how it got into your bathroom there. It wasn't necessarily from your dress.
No, I was. My room had like a, you know, in New York, how you're around like this little outside space, and the windows were open because it's an older hotel.
Right.
And then my dress was hanging in a dark closet in the hotel room, and then it was wrapped up in my suitcase all day while, you know, and I think it sort of went dormant. And then when I opened it up, hung it up, and then it was dark, I think it fell off. Because there were no bats in my condo before I went to New York.
Hmm. Right. Well, actually, this brings up another point I wanted to make for a previous caller that had his screen open and bat flying around from room to room till he put it in a single room. Bats will find a very small opening to get in, sometimes a half inch or so less.
Size of a dime?
Yeah. And, you know, if summer's here now and we're firing up our air conditioners, often that is a point of entry is through the air conditioner, the part between the window, if you got one of those window air conditioners. So they will find a small hole. And if you said your place had the windows open, then I wouldn't doubt it if that bat or other bats were there multiple times.
Well, thanks a lot for calling. Caitlin, appreciate your call. And Dave and Jennifer, here we are out of time. Thank you so much. And looks like we still don't have the white nose in Wisconsin. Thank heavens.
That's a big relief. Wiping my brow with relief for now. And, you know, it's knocking at our door. It's like the encyclopedia salesman or vacuum person. You just don't want to open the door, even though, it's at our door front right now.
And, again, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources website, which is, by the way, I love the new website. I think they've done a nice job updating that website.
Mm-hmm.
For a whole bunch of things, but to find out more about bats and your bat program, go right there.
Yes, and look for Wisconsin Bat Program link, or it might be called Wisconsin Bat Monitoring Program.
Dave, Jennifer, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Hopefully you'll come back and be with us again.
Thank you, Larry, and thanks for spreading the word about bats.
Glad to do it. Jennifer Sherradell is a conservation biologist and cave mine specialist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Dave Riddell, bat ecologist with the Wisconsin DNR, and two of them have been married about a month now, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And they got married in Scotland. Are there any bats over there?
There are. I tried not to think about work.
We did find wonders.
Thanks. Thanks again, you two. And we'll look forward to your next visit for sure. Oh, man. Well, we're going to switch gears with you and turn our attention to another health concern that we have, and that has to do with our lungs and smoking. And Dr. Mike Fiore is back. This is the 2-year anniversary of the smoking ban in Wisconsin, and we're going to talk about what have been the effects of that smoking ban. The good, there's a lot of good, and also answer your questions about the ban and also about quitting smoking. I see on our Facebook page we already had some comments from people who are trying to quit smoking, and we'll probably be bringing those up. You'll be able to join in by phone or via our email or via my Facebook page to do that as well. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, Dr. Mike Fiore, our guest next.